Welcome to the second season of the Alt Animation Podcast, the podcast that talks about the saltier side of the animation industry. I'm Josh Ryan.
And I'm Robert Orndorff.
So,
Seasons are 2.5 years long. How long has it been?
Well, since, I mean, the last one that we did was just a couple weeks ago, but...
Okay, but how long have we been from doing
that? Oh, man. Oh, well, over 2 years, or over a year now. I don't know. I'd have to look at that.
Definitely over a year.
Definitely over a year, for sure. It's been over a year since we were really doing it regularly, so it's got to be over two years.
But in podcast land, time does not exist.
Yeah, because you can listen to these back-to-back like we never took a break.
Yeah.
In fact, don't listen to this podcast until we're done with all of the other ones.
Time is an illusion.
Yeah.
You will find that through searching your inner being.
Well, and you know, Robert, your jokes are hilarious, and I hate to say, but it looks like you're going to be moving.
I am moving to New York. Yeah.
So we don't know how many more podcasts we have with you, but we'll definitely keep in touch and try to hopefully do some Skype stuff. But
yeah,
until then, maybe we got one or two more out of you.
Yeah, and just make sure to replace me with somebody who won't be as good as me.
Yeah, no problem.
I'll be fine.
No problem. Well, let's get into some animation news. We'll save the goodbyes for later, Robert. Or not save them at all.
Just awkwardly
shake hands and say, okay, buddy.
No more I love yous.
Yeah. All right, well, first thing I want to talk about, the show today is a good one. We interviewed Ryan Quincy.
We interviewed.
What was that show? Remember that show?
Wienerville?
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good show.
You got wienerized?
Yeah.
Nickelodeon, folks, check it out.
Oh, I'm sure everyone knows.
Nick at Night, probably now.
You know, I tried looking up Wienerville on...
God, can you imagine, like, when we're old, like, oh, honey, look, this show, Wienerville, you know?
And your grandkids
will be like, ugh, I don't like this show, it's only one dimension, you know?
That's going to be a weird show no matter how many years pass. Like, our grandkids are still going to be blown away by that show.
Do you think there's a show from their time that's weird like Wienerville is, and it's just inherently weird and would have creeped us out, but it never just... The tapes got burned?
I can't wait for the day when something like Tim and Eric is, like, on Nick at Night, where that's
no one
just
will get it at all. Like, academics in, you know, like... You know, universities will not know. We don't know. Like we've analyzed the cultural leanings of the time, and we still don't know what this is about. Anyway, we're not talking about animation.
Well, I guess they are an Adult Swim, so they have some animation.
But we
interviewed one of my heroes, and it was one of the toughest interviews, because you know, after doing this podcast for as many times as I have, you know, the interviews are starting to get a little easier. Like the people that I really admire.
Well, you're improving your interview skills.
Well, you know, it isn't as big of a shock as it used to be. Whenever I get to talk to people that I really admire, you know, originally it was just so new and fresh. You freeze up.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and this totally happened to me again. In fact, when you guys listen to the interview, you're going to cringe. It's going to be really bad because there's a lot of times where I say the
But
wrong
I feel
word.
Like it's cathartic. Because you geek out, we live vicariously through your geek.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just to set the stage here, it's Ryan Quincy, who was the animation director of South Park for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. And he has this new show on IFC Films called Out There. Really quirky, fun show. It's a good one. But, you know, I mean, South Park, I think, is just one of the most brilliant shows. And the animation itself, I love because they do so much with so little. Mm. And, you know, they get so much character out of these little guys. And I have a million questions, you know, that I want to ask. Like, I'm driving there. The IFC, you know, I had to, like, email a bunch of IFC representatives. And, like, it was real fancy. And they set up an interview. They got a room at the Driscoll Hotel downtown Austin for me. Yeah. So, and I think that they thought I was a much bigger deal than I am.
That's the best.
But Ryan was such an awesome guy. He's a very down-to-earth, very open to talk. You know, the poor guy, you could tell he had been doing a million interviews and flying back and forth and just exhausted because he's still working on the show. But he's a great interviewer or a great interviewee, and you know, definitely stick around and listen for that. You'll hear me say the wrong things. I think I called him a liar at one point, not because I wanted to. I thought I was being
funny.
What
was his reaction to that?
He was kind of taken aback. You know, it's a very awkward interview, and there's so many things.
Did he like did he say something and then your nerdiness was like, no, you are wrong.
I was trying to be fun. I was trying to be like, hey, I'm not your typical interview, you know? I'm not a regular journalist. I'm not here just to do publicity. I want to know about you.
And look, man, I like animation. I'm like, yeah, you.
Talk to me in a real way.
We're the same. Yeah. All right, so what is animating on the twos? Like,
well, that's an irrelevant question for South Park. Actually, no. Well, it's relevant for their new show. But anyways, definitely listen for that interview and cut me some slack because there's some bad parts. But there were just so many questions I wanted to ask about South Park and about his new show that I just didn't get to. And I feel like I really missed an opportunity to, like, pick his brain. But at least I got to talk to him for, like, 45 minutes to an hour. And it was wonderful. It was a really good interview.
You have qualified the interview well.
Yes.
Everyone is now prepared.
All right, good. Well, a couple things we wanted to talk about in terms of animation news as of late. Bruce Timm, who is an awesome, awesome guy. You know, everyone knows that he worked on Ren and Stimpy. He did the Batman animated series. He basically is the guy who set the tone, the style, the whole, I guess, feel of Warner Brothers animation the past couple of years, you know, with all the direct to DVD stuff, all the shows, you know, he has a very unique style of how he draws. Mm-hmm. Well, he's been working on that show, the Green Lantern, the animated series of Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. In fact, Kevin did a cell therapy about it just last time, and I've been watching every episode of it. It's really good. It's an awesome show. It's, you know, very well written. It's got some unique story plot twists to it. Very, you know, it's a very heavy sci-fi.
That's good. I've never really been a huge fan of Green Lantern.
It's not the coolest character.
Now you're selling me on.
Yeah, I mean, he really makes it feel cinematic and important, and that these are real characters in a real space. You know, of course, there's going to be some elements of, you know, it's a kid's show for kids on Cartoon Network, mm-hmm. but it definitely has very adult themes, and I guess, you know, overall...
Well, that's just, like, the old Batman show. You know?
Exactly. It feels a lot like Batman. Of course, you know, it's a bigger scope. It's not so dark, and, of course, it's the difference between Green Lantern and Batman. But, unfortunately, it got canceled after the first season, and the reasoning behind it is a little ridiculous. It's because the Warner Brothers basically said, well, after that movie came out, the bad one with Ryan Reynolds... all of the stores and online places can't sell merchandise because no one wants to buy Green Lantern stuff.
Yeah.
So they basically told them, like, hey, dude, we got to cancel the show because the movie kind of ruined the show for you, so sorry.
Well, wait, so here's my interpretation of your reading of that.
Yeah.
If we can't sell merch, it's not profitable?
Exactly.
That, I mean, look, from their point of view, that makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a little ridiculous that they have to assume that just because the merchandise sales were really bad for the movie.
Green Lantern lampshade sales are down. I think this is a sign that we need to,
Well, I mean, it was a great show. It's sad to see, you know, that it's over. But I kind of wanted to talk about these new 3D animated high-budget shows. Because, and also Star Wars Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. One, I love that show. And there's some people that dislike it. But I think overall it's a really good show. That just got canceled as well, because, you know, they're kind of doing a whole new...
The
switch over.
A new direction.
And the new movie, you know, they're not wanting to kind of focus on their old IP stuff, you know, like the Clone Wars and everything.
So. You know who's really, really screwed on that one? Not that this is an animation thing. Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have all of those Clone Wars series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just the obviously now Disney owns Marvel, Disney owns Star Wars. Star Wars going to Marvel.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, and, you know, there's been a lot of, a lot of blowback or a lot of collateral damage because Seth Green's show that was like a parody, it's like a Lucasfilm parody, it was a Star Wars parody show, all 3D, you know, looked pretty funny, will probably never see the light of day just because they're changing everything over. So this poor guy has been working on this show for over a year now.
He's a veteran, he knows how it goes.
True, but, you know, it's just sad to see, like, creative ideas and, like, especially like the Green Lantern, where he has a really awesome story arc that kind of builds up to the end of the first season. You can see where he's going with it, and it'll never be seen. You know, like, it's frustrating because you know it's there.
Yeah.
And especially with all the stuff out there that gets, you know, renewed that really has no story behind it. But, like, the Clone Wars got taken down as well. And it makes you wonder, like, okay, some of these 3D shows, I mean, it, like the new Ninja Turtles 3D. I think it's awesome. I love it. You know, there's some people also that don't like the style, especially a lot of people that are 2D traditionalists. You know, they just they hate seeing these 3D stuff.
But it's pretty cartoony. I haven't warmed up to it, but I haven't tried to spend any time warming up to it. I think probably if I sat down and forced myself to watch a couple episodes, I would get over. Because the style is different, and it feels like a different. And well, there was that other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle show in, like, what was it, late 90s, early 2000s, that just, I was like, I'm never watching any.
Did you watch the movie?
The one that, where Shredder isn't the bad guy?
He's the bad guy.
The one with the aliens?
Oh, yeah, you're right. But he's, I'm, Weinstein man, I gotta watch that again.
That was the Weinstein team, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Speaking of Weinstein Company.
Well, hold on, before we talk about that, I just kind of want to talk a little bit about these 3D animated shows.
Just step on my segue. Just step on
it. It was a good segue, but we didn't cover what I wanted to cover. So, you know, I don't know, and I guess you haven't really seen a lot of these shows, huh? You haven't watched, like, The Clone Wars, really?
No, I haven't.
You watched the Tartakovsky ones, though, right?
Oh, of course. Well, I mean, if you've heard the other podcasts, I bring him up a lot.
I guess the thing that's interesting to me and what makes it worthy to talk about is that I think there's a correlation between, you know, these are very expensive shows to produce. Mm-hmm. You know, they are very cinematic. You know, there's a lot of thought process that needs to go into it for the story and everything. But, I mean, you know, it's just interesting because they put so much money into it that it makes you wonder, okay, well, is it because of how much money they're putting into it that these shows are good? Because they know that they need to get their money's worth out of the budget. So, I don't know. It makes you think, like, well, these actually are gigantic shows that are doing good. You know, like, usually you think, oh, well, it's got to be the creator-driven stuff, you know, where it's a guy with a vision and, you know, that's kind of what makes the show great. But, you know, I think, I don't know, I don't want to say that money is what's making these shows great, but there is certainly a level of, well, we're investing a lot into it, everyone's going to be working harder and trying to make it a better show, as opposed to a 2D show that maybe wouldn't cost as much. But, okay, I guess a good example is the Batman animated series. I mean, that was an awesome show.
You, money can do a lot of things, and the lack of money can do a lot of things. Obviously, lack of money can force creativity. Too much money can hinder it, you know. But money can also make things possible that wouldn't have been possible otherwise. I think, you know, the more money you spend on something, typically with a big studio, the more money goes into the promotion of it too.
Damn.
I think if you talk to each of the showrunners of each of these shows, you'd have a different viewpoint on, or a different answer to that question.
Yeah. It seems like they spend more time on the story, you know, to make it feel like, I guess the real point that I'm trying to get at is that it's more of the movie in the way that they treat these stories as opposed to like a TV show.
Well, I mean, how many of these guys seem like auteurs to you? Because you kind of brought that into it as well.
Well, I mean, Bruce Timm obviously is, you know, he has a very distinct vision and, you know, he's very cinematic. And that's one of the reasons why he got fired, or he quit Warner Brothers, is because they canceled the show. Obviously, people know now that he can direct, you know, very awesome, very high-budget stuff. So that's probably where he's going, is to make movies now. But, you know, I guess the thing that's strange to me and where I'm trying to get at is a lot of these really good shows now are 3D animated because, I don't know, is it because kids are starting to, or whoever, viewers in general, are starting to expect that level of production value and to them?
Mention the IPs. Run them off as a string. Who are we talking about?
I'm talking about Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the new Batman show that's going to be coming out. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the Star Wars Clone Wars for the major parts of it.
All IPs that have as many adult viewers or more as young viewers.
I don't know, the Clone Wars. Well, I guess, yeah, the Clone Wars definitely reaches a higher.
Well, it's Star Wars. It's Star Wars. So, you know, I mean, you have. Yeah, it's just perhaps better writing equals a much larger audience.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's. Isn't there like two Avengers shows right now? There's like one where they're adults and one where they're...
Yeah, I don't think the adult Avengers show is going on anymore, but okay. I think the young Avengers one is, yeah.
I didn't which find is either one particularly compelling, though, now that I think...
I watched the whole first Avengers.
Did you?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. It's on
It was
it's
totally Saturday morning cartoon.
Well, yeah, era. true.
Yeah, but I haven't seen that the one that's like sort of the... Avengers babies or whatever, but...
Yeah, I haven't seen that one at all. But the direct-to-DVD movies were really good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know, I guess... And it might just be my particular... what I like. But, you know, I feel like those shows... I don't know, if things are going to start going that way, where it's like, hey, people expect it to be this high level of production value, it's not just a show anymore. Because, I mean, you see that with TV. Like, back like 10 years ago, movies were the best things to go to. Well, and, you know, you hear people nowadays talk about, especially, like, you know, the Nerdist, this is something that keeps on popping up on that podcast, is...
The golden age of television.
Yeah, yeah, the stuff on television is almost better than the movies, because it's more, you know, it's more cinematic, mm-hmm. and the production value is
Well, high. And they're not chasing the lowest common denominator, yeah. which movies are right now. I mean, they're coming out of that, but, you know, we've all seen enough Rock movies,
yeah.
The Rock or whatever, yeah. you know, to know kind of... what to expect, and not yeah. much, you know. I mean, nothing against The Rock and his movies, but, you know, Six Fast, Six Furious is, I'm sure, on its way, you know, to yeah. theaters. And
well, the G.I. Joe, he's in that. Yeah. Have you seen the preview for Pain and Gain with
yes,
Mark Wahlberg? That was really good.
But, yeah, back to animation.
Animation. But just a couple of other things that I wanted to touch on, because we talk about the salty or sadly animation industry. The Escape from Planet Earth movie came out, kind of came and went. I didn't see it. I wasn't sure. I'll probably eventually see it.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a really interesting story behind how that movie got made and kind of the legalities behind it. Fight with Harvey Weinstein, the Weinstein Company, which don't usually do animation. So it's interesting to see
how... They did Ninja Turtles.
True.
They
yeah.
had aliens as villains instead of Shredder... Or any of the other...
See,
classics.
No, no, no. Okay, the movie didn't have aliens. It had, like, ancient creatures.
Yeah.
Whereas the new show...
It's been
the
a while, and
new show, the Crane, is, like,
yeah.
the main bad guy.
Which, you know, either him or Shredder, you know?
Yeah, well, he's in the show as well.
Yeah,
but it's interesting. I don't know. I like the style of that show. You gotta watch it. The animation, I think, is really good, too. It definitely is... It doesn't feel hyper-realistic, you know? It's like, mm-hmm. You can't just shoot it with people in a costume and it'd be the same show, you know?
Right.
Like, it has that feeling of, like, the old cartoon in a way, you know, where it's real punchy, kind of humorous, very cool, you know, fast-paced for the ADD generation.
Speaking of ADD, we were talking about the Weinstein Company and...
Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know, I didn't want to talk about it too much just because it's kind of an old story now, but... You know, if you're interested in kind of, you know, how things aren't always so peachy keen in the animation world, which as of right now...
Tell the story.
Well, they just had legal fights with it, you know, where...
Between who and who?
Between the creators of the movie, uh-huh. or, yeah, and the writers originally, and Harvey Weinstein. And they just have a really funny, was it summons complaint exhibit, where they wrote a very scathing legal document that usually, you know, is very...
But what was the beef? What was the specific...
Just, obviously, like,
this
Weinstein...
This movie would have done better if these guys had run...
Well, yeah, you know,
better.
Like how... There's a lot of complaints of Harvey Weinstein, like, trying to... What's the word? There's a whole thing about the guy who made that Irish movie,
Boondock Saints.
Boondock Saints, yeah. yeah. It's
Troy
almost
Duffy?
The same, Troy Duffy. It's
yeah.
almost the same story as that guy. But... You know, these guys are just, they're trying to make a good movie,
mm-hmm.
and he's obviously trying to make as much money possible out of it.
Huh.
And it's just, it's interesting
to
see.
I didn't see that documentary that way. I thought Troy Duffy kind of was the bad guy. Anyway.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, I didn't mean to bring up Troy Duffy in a way that's like, this is that guy.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same thing, the same complaints,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, this guy goes in, say, hey, I want to make your cool project, I want to make it awesome, you know, we're an indie film thing, you know, but we, even though they're not,
mm-hmm.
they try to be that way.
Can you be an indie film in animation?
Oh, yeah, certainly.
You think so? I mean...
Yeah.
An indie budget is, what would you say an indie budget is?
Oh, I have no idea.
$10 million?
$10 million? Like, yeah. Okay. Like, well, the one last year, the Cat in Paris, I think that won the Oscar last year. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely an indie.
That was... Was that a foreign film, or was that...
Yeah, it's a foreign film.
Yeah, foreign film and an indie film aren't the same thing.
True, but budget-wise. And yes, it is the same thing because it's independently produced. You know, like, they're not... It's not going with a gigantic
studio. I don't even like the concept of, like, indie film. Like,
yeah, well, you brought it up. Anyway, yeah, you brought it up.
Yeah, right, right, yeah.
When are you leaving again?
Next.
I'm just kidding. So... That's enough of Planet Earth. It's a really interesting story. Check it out. Read up a lot of, you know, Cartoon Brew has a really good write-up about it. But, and then the other thing I want to talk about is Activision just released this crazy new video of extremely realistic video game facial tracking. We talked a little bit about it with the whole, what is that game? Ah, my brain is frying. L.A. Noir. We talked about it with L.A. Noir,
yeah.
How it was just so realistic, and it was crazy, and, like, the animation is all automated, but it looks good. And I don't know, it's just, it's something that I've noticed, because, you know, I'm sure people in L.A. Have been feeling this pressure a little bit.
You're kind of the John Henry of animation, aren't you? Like, you just keep seeing this machine coming, and you just...
Well, I mean, trust me, I'm not as bad about it as some people are, because, really, the technology... is what made it accessible to me, because I'm not the best draftsman or the best
animator. Yeah, but you do refuse to like things that are...
Well, I mean, obviously, as an animator, I want to animate things. And lately, I've been seeing just a lot of people, you know, in town, especially with video game studios, where they're just going solely with motion capture and especially facial tracking and stuff. And, you know, a lot of my friends have been complaining about, you know, not being able to find
actual animation jobs. Yeah, I don't mean to sound like... I don't know what the word, crass or like
insensitive.
Insensitive.
Well, no, but you have every right to be, because it's an industry just like everybody else. And if you get the same results from a computer, and not only that, but they look better. Now, I have no idea how much time went into the rigging of this Activision thing, but it looks very realistic. Now, of course, you're never going to be.
And it also seems like the kind of thing where. They weren't just working. They probably weren't just working on it for a project. It's all part R&D. Well, R&D, but the PR of R&D. In other words, like, look what we've got in store. You know, and who knows? Like, it seems like one of those things that like looks really pretty, and I have no idea. You know, I'm a layman on this stuff, but practical applications may not look as nice as the video that we got. You know,
Well. That's a very good point to end on there, Robert.
Okay, I don't think so, but...
next podcast, we have an interview with Lucas Martel, the guy who made Pigeon Impossible. He has a very interesting new project and a very interesting way of going about it. It's a good interview, so listen for that. It should actually be coming out relatively soon.
But since time doesn't exist in podcast world or reality, just not the reality...
It will be coming out.
...subjectively live in,
So that's a great segue to this interview, Robert.
Okay,
Ryan Quincy, because I made an idiot of myself, doing that exact thing where I was stuttered and couldn't find the words I was looking for with one of my heroes, one of the guys that I look up to. But anyways, listen to this interview with Ryan Quincy. He has an awesome story. A story that makes you extremely jealous and wish that it happened to you, but
he's a liar, apparently.
He's not a liar.
You should have seen his face. I wish y'all could see his face. It was like, no, hey, don't make that into a...
Yeah, don't make it into a thing. But honestly, like, he's one of the nicest guys that I've talked to. Very well, you know, he definitely deserves his success, and he's earned every bit of it. So listen for that interview with Ryan Quincy coming up right now. Oh, absolutely. And I have 30 minutes, right?
Yeah, we can do it.
Okay, cool.
Sure, that's fine.
Is that too long?
No, that's good.
All right, well, I guess I'll start off. I'm here with Ryan Quincy. Big honor to talk to you, by the way. I tried to hide my geekiness outside a little bit, but it's a real honor to talk to you. Awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Of course. Thanks, man.
So you've worked on a bunch of cool projects. Start off with, I guess your origin story is pretty cool, too. It's kind of that... The story that everyone wishes that they had. Go ahead and
start. About coming out to L.A. or...
Well, yeah. Just like how you grew up and like your process of like getting into the business is just... It's basically a story in itself that's really interesting.
Yeah. I always liked, as a kid, always liked to draw, always liked to make movies, always liked, you know, animation, but never was like... I never had like that... defining moment of like, I'm gonna be an animator. You know, it was just sort of like I fell into it, but in college I was an English major and I was a graphic design minor, and my school only had one animated class, and it was like the old Oxbury camera, yeah, and with the plate. So we painted cells, and we did like a 10-second thing, and I was like, oh, this is cool to, you know, kind of got, you know, the bug there.
Yeah.
And I moved to Lincoln, Nebraska after I graduated, and I spent just a miserable year there, like four jobs of like just awful jobs, like delivering pizzas,
yeah,
and all that kind of stuff. And I knew that I had to, I wasn't going to do what I wanted to do there. And I was like, well, maybe I'll check out animation. And LA seemed like the mecca of, you know,
what all that stuff. Which is a pretty big leap to make in your mind. At the time, did you know what you were getting into?
No. No, I was definitely very green and very naive. And I thought, I'm going to show up and I'm going to get a show right away.
Yeah.
You know, that type of the world's going to crumble before my feet.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. So I had a friend that said, yeah, come out, you can stay on my couch and while you look for a job. So that was huge.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I seriously, it was one of those stories where I just packed up my car and drove out. And by total coincidence, right next door was Eric Stow, lived there, and he's the animation director of South Park. And across the street was Matt Stone and Trey Parker. Just total coincidence. And South Park had just started, and they were fully staffed, so it wasn't like I just showed up and they gave me a job, but
yeah,
we had, you know, we had each other on each other's radars, you know,
yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
thing. So that was kind of crazy. And but I did all the rounds of like doing layout tests for The Simpsons and King of the Hill and taking life drawing classes and all that kind of stuff, because I really wasn't like formally trained animator. I didn't go to school for it, and I was like, I still didn't know what I wanted to do, but I thought, well, this kind of has all the things I like drawing and directing and storytelling and that type of stuff.
And I'm guessing you probably were drawn to the fact that anything could happen, so any, you know, any particular story you wanted to tell.
Yeah.
So it's hard to, I mean, I'm sure, I'm not saying your story isn't true, but it's hard to believe that, I mean, it's such a cool story, you know, like, how does that happen? I guess it's just serendipity.
Yeah, that was strange. And so then, yeah, so like 5 or 6 months passed, and I, there was a school in Roland Heights, California, and they offered an animation program there, and they offered it to adults in the evenings, really cheap. It was, and so I went there, and I met a guy there named Cameron Gray, who got a job working for Corky, Quake, and Bush, the Space Bass stuff. They did all the Mad TV.
Which I just want to say, I love those. I mean, I watched the, you know, growing up I watched, you know, the reruns when they came on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And I thought those were the coolest things, man, you know, because I'm a big motion graphics guy.
Yeah.
And that was one of those things that just kind of started off. And they did the actual animations for that, right? Not the bumpers.
Right.
Okay.
The animations.
Which were awesome, too. The animations were great.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, they did, like, Raging Rudolph.
Yeah.
You know, like, the Rankin Bass meets Martin Scorsese. And
yeah.
And they did, like, Gumby Old Men. And yeah, yeah, so.
And no one else was really doing that level of, I guess, edgy animation at the time.
Yeah, totally. And that was right on the cusp of also, like, South Park also. And we did a South Park Charlie Brown parody.
Yeah.
And so we actually,
which is hilarious.
Yeah, so we actually did the same thing that Matt and Trey did for Spirit of Christmas. They like cut out construction paper. So I had that on my reel,
yeah.
And we went on hiatus, and I saw that South Park was hiring for the movie. So I went and had that on my reel, and that pretty much got me the job.
So the trick for all the animation students out there is to get paid to do an animation test from another company.
Yeah.
So that way you can interview for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's one way.
So, all right. Looking back on, you know, when you first started, do you feel like there's a certain level of, I guess, delusion that you have to be able to jump into projects like this, like to feel like you can? Because I know the more that I learn, the more I realize how much work is involved to do a project. Do you feel like there has to be like a level of kind of
like
naivety?
Blind? Oh,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
like blind. Yeah, you have to go into a blind a little bit.
How do you keep that, like, especially now in your career when you're the man of the show?
It's hard. Especially, it happens though all the time. Like, going into this, I didn't think it was going to be as hard as it would, you know. But it was, yeah, it was grueling. But it was it's what I wanted to do. It's what I signed up for, so.
You kind of just ignore that part of your brain that says...
A little bit, yeah. You kind of have to.
That is the trick, I think so, yeah. I mean, anything that you're afraid to do or seems daunting, you kind of have to forget that and just jump
take it head on. Yeah, exactly. Because if I wouldn't have, done that, then I wouldn't have... I'd be resenting and regretting a bunch of stuff.
Well, okay, let's just... I'll try not to talk about it too much, but South Park, of course, everyone mm-hmm. knows, is just genius. The animation itself, you know... I think the common thing that most people talk about in terms of the animation of South Park is, the cutout style and simplicity and things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at being an animator, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this will probably think that it probably is harder to do that type of animation and to really secure or, I guess, have the characters... emotions come through for that specific character.
Yeah.
Did you guys have any kind of like mantras or like, here's the line, here's where, because I mean, over animating, most mm-hmm. people want to over animate.
Yeah.
Not like it's,
totally.
You know, that's the thing most people do. Mm-hmm. So is there like a cutoff point? How do you know like how far you're allowed to go?
Yeah, we definitely over the years accumulated like a style guideline and rules of how to animate the characters. But to go back when I was, applied for the job, I was like so frustrated by like getting rejection letters from all these other places, and I was like, oh, I could go work on South Park, that's that's not animation, that's easy, you know, you're just kind of bobbing around and but the evolution of the style of has really, it's gone, like you compare like the first season to what they're doing now and they're actually using like 3D rigs and like the Cthulhu episodes and a lot of that stuff.
Which can sometimes be a little jarring in the best way. I think they use it, use it pretty well.
Yeah. But yeah, getting back to your question about the style with, as simple as those characters look, there are like rules and things where the eyebrows shouldn't go, you know, you have like, you can only go so far up with the eyebrows and... There's all these little subtle things that you wouldn't.
So it's just something that it built over time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the timing for that show, because I mean, there's some animations that are some of the funniest ones. You know, in compared to some shows that are fully hand drawn, fully keyframed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's parts of parts that where Cartman's doing something that is just hilarious,
right.
And it's all in the timing and the kind of limitation. Not of the medium, but of his movement, of his space, like how far he's allowed to go somewhere.
Yep.
When you push it just a little bit more, it hits that point, man, that just, it cracks you up.
Yeah, totally. Use the limitations to your advantage, for sure.
It seems like just such a, foreign concept, or not foreign concept, but just an unreachable goal to, like, get that. It blows my mind to think of how you guys...
You can get a lot out of that simplistic kind of... looking characters.
Yeah. It's almost like you're making it look easy when it really isn't. You know, it's that whole thing.
Yeah.
Making it look like you didn't really put that much effort into it, but really there's, I'm sure,
yeah.
tons.
Oh, totally. And things are, the way Matt and Trey work, they're changing stuff constantly. So they're always rewriting stuff. You're always redoing things and different dances and whatever the characters need to be doing. So,
and we all watched the documentary 6 Days to Air
uh-huh.
that you were in.
Uh-huh.
It seems like a crazy, mm-hmm. exciting thing. But all of us that have worked in the industry know there's ridiculous deadlines and times like that. And of most projects, it's not worth it. Did you guys ever feel burnt out or like it wasn't worth it? I mean, I'm sure you don't want to say anything about the show. But.
No. It was always, that crew is, there was pretty small turnover there, and a lot of those people have been there from the beginning, so it's a pretty tight-knit family, dysfunctional family, everyone's in, all hands on deck, and they're into the show and believe in it, so... But yeah, it's grueling. I mean, that's those 8 weeks of like 100+ hour work weeks, and you're just the worst is when you're like right in the middle of it, and you're like, oh man, we got 4 more of these or 5 more of these. It's just like a endurance test.
You hit that middle point where you just can't see the end.
Yeah.
But so it's really, it's the people, I'm guessing, and the show itself just being so good that energizes you guys. I mean, is that really that?
Totally, yeah. And also just the level of dedication that Trey and Matt have. Like, like, I know, like, on The Simpsons, Matt Groening really isn't involved with it. And same thing with, I think Seth MacFarlane's even kind of detached himself.
Yeah, he's totally off the, all kinds of, other than voices, he's been for, like, the last two seasons, I think.
That's not the case with Matt and Trey. They're there till the bitter end. And that's, you know, that's inspiring. And that's cool to have, like, your boss have that dedication.
Well, it just shows that they're just as into it as you are. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, all right, that leads me to my next question about Out There, your new show on IFC. It's relatively new. It's for a show. It's pretty good.
We just aired February 22nd, and we're on it 10 Eastern, 9 Central on Fridays.
So I've read a couple interviews of yours, and it seems like a lot of people kind of focus on, you know, why do the characters look this way? Which is funny, because no one really ever asks that for any other cartoon. I'm wondering if it's IFC. Is it because it's on IFC that people feel like there needs to be some kind of subversive
thing? Some weird thing?
Yeah.
Maybe that could be, but I think it's because it's set in such a grounded, realistic world that maybe that stands out more.
Okay.
But, yeah, maybe they're like, oh, IFC is just trying to be weird for weird's sake, but not at all, you know.
Well, or that there should be some kind of reason behind
it. Yeah. And even when... because I developed Out There with 20th Century Fox, I pitched it back in 2008, and they even at times would say, like, we need to explain why they look the way they do, or we need to change them to look human. And there'd be those conversations that would just, it was awful, like,
it's a cartoon.
Yeah, a meteor hit, or you have to explain everything, or there's something in the water that makes them that way. And it's just, it's such a American way of looking at things. Everything has to be explained.
And so what do you do in that situation? Do you just swallow your pride and try to power through it?
Yeah. That's what was so great about IFC was, like, they embraced it. They're like, we don't want to change anything about it. We love this, and totally just cradled us, you know, and nurtured us and everything. So.
Well, it's such a cool channel. I don't want to say this because someone from IFC is in the room, but I mean, they have such cool programming on. Where, you know, it's very creative or creator driven.
Yeah.
You know, where it's the Mark Maron show, I mean, it's him. And it's, you know, Portlandia. I mean, those guys are in charge of the whole show.
Yeah.
Did you feel like there was any kind of, I'm sure it was, you know, relieving, but was there any kind of pressure because of the caliber of people that are also making shows on that channel?
You know, not really, but it just felt like, just new ground, like the Wild West, you know. It's just kind of the open prairie, and you were like, oh, these people are doing this over here, and it just felt like very I don't know, just inspiring to be in a place that was, you know, so championed the creator driven stuff. And they're,
it seems totally different than your typical studio, because I guess that's one of the other questions I had is, I know you did a couple shorts before, right?
Yes.
And those were for 20th Century Fox.
Yes.
So was there any kind of change knowing that you can kind of do it more what you want on IFC? Did you change the way the show felt or the mood or anything?
Well, those shorts were a little bit different because there were three, like, 4 or 5 minute shorts, and it really needed to get across, like, the world, and I definitely wanted to focus on the characters and make it a character-driven piece. And it was a lot more swearing, a little more angst. So when we wrote the script for 20th, because after the shorts we went to a pilot script, that really got Foxified, and it got pretty... so when IFC greenlit the show, we got to be able to kind of go back and get it, you know, more kind of the way I wanted it to be.
So when you were originally creating the show, I mean, did you have that certain level of flexibility that you kind of left it open to? I mean, I guess you have to when you're thinking about possibility of the show going on for a long time, but I mean, how much can you let go, you know, to change?
It's hard because, you know, also too, like, IFC, they were really great in the whole, like, developing process, because all we had were those three shorts and a pilot script, and we still didn't really know the world, didn't know the characters, and they were really instrumental in helping us flesh them out and figure them out. And I mean, to look back now, and we started about a year ago on the season, and just to see, like, yeah, that's really not how I thought that character was going to be, but actually it turned out, you know,
It's almost like really a symbiotic cool. relationship yeah. with your network. I've never thought about it that way because it yeah. is kind of important in a lot of networks. That's probably how they screw up shows.
Yeah, you know, yeah. totally. You hear the horror stories about, yeah. you know, executive notes and network notes, but all these notes that were always came from a good place and, you know, they cared about the show and it wasn't just for giving notes for notes' sake.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that's why it's a good show to work on and a fun show.
Yeah.
So, character design, you know, that's, you don't have to explain that, uh-huh. but was there any type of, in terms of animation style, you know, the way they moved, the mm-hmm. way that, you know, how many frames you went, was there, how much of the process went into thinking about that?
We worked with Bento Atlanta, so the whole show is made in the USA, so that's something I'm proud of, too.
Atlanta does some pretty good...
Yeah, they do some great stuff, and it's a tendency, too, like a lot of animation students kind of come out, and it's big gestures and big expressions, and, you know, you got a million different expressions going off, and this show is more slow-paced and slow-burn, and... at first, some of the stuff came back, and it was really over-animated, and it was just like, this is no one... I want it to be more realistic, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I want it to be more naturalistic, and they had these crazy, you know, eye expressions, and I was just like, pare it all back, you know, just, you know...
Yeah.
Go, you know, just... And I would do a lot of video reference stuff, too, and just, like, just do, like, how a normal person would... gesture instead of like yeah. some big, you know, crazy cartoon.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you know from working on South Park that, you know, the way the animation moves
yeah.
affects the way the show plays.
Totally, know? And it, less is more. Into. Less is more for out there, I think. So
yeah, and it I guess that leads me to the next part is the voice acting. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about it too much because it seems like for animated shows, you know, they focus on who's in the
yeah.
show or what big name actors, but. You kind of, you're the main guy. You're doing the main voice, which yeah. is secretly every animator's dream.
Yeah.
And I know you, in interviews, you say that wasn't your idea, but come on, really?
Yeah, it was my whole
plan. That was your whole plan.
My vanity project, yeah. No, I did that seriously out of, like, necessity, but...
I believe you.
Yeah. I mean, it's been cool, though. I'm glad that I got to do that, and it was a lot of fun.
So. Yeah, I mean, really... I can't think of anyone else right now, well, I guess other than Trey and Matt, that of people that really can have that amount of control over their show, mm-hmm. which is really cool, and also be a part of it in a really fun way, which is doing the voice.
Yeah, yeah, and so, I mean, I'm pretty much just doing my regular voice. I'm not really doing a voice, but I did do some other characters on there, too, so that was fun.
Is it as rewarding as animation?
The money's better.
Nice.
Whatever that's worth.
I can imagine there's more instant gratification where you're not spending
exactly.
3 weeks
yeah,
on
totally.
It.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
totally. So, in terms of you animating on stuff, I mean, you haven't really animated on much the past couple of years, right?
I didn't animate anything on out there. On the shorts I did, I touched about every single shot, and I'll still sometimes do... things just kind of block things out to okay. send like the Chad and Chris have a secret handshake that I did and sent to them and
okay
you know things like that or
very cool
so but a lot of it's been like video reference so I'll do a lot of that and send it to them
I guess that's where I was getting at do you miss it you know is it something that you feel like you get just as much enjoyment out of watching other people's finished shots as you did your own or is the lack of the process is that
yeah, I miss it, but it is cool to be like, see other people's interpretation, and you know, it's like, oh, they did it way better than I could, you know. I never really fashioned myself as a really great animator, you know, but I love doing it. But I just, I miss it from time to time, but it's, you know, we do it in harmony, Toon Boom Harmony.
Okay.
So I'm kind of familiar with that. I'm more familiar with like Maya and Flash, so.
Then I was going to ask you the technique, the you know the technical side of it.
Mm-hmm.
That you answered my question there.
Yeah.
What was the reason behind that? I mean, was it
Was it budget reasons, I'm guessing?
Budget reasons, and also Bento Box. They do Bob's Burgers, and they kind of already have this pipeline installed. And it's, they have a partnership with Toon Boom, and so we just kind of plugged into their...
Man, it looks great. It, you know, it definitely has that, I mean, the same aesthetic that someone who doesn't know what's going on, that they would not be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good blend of replacement style and, you know, you don't want it to look too tweeny and, you know, you want it to, I still want it to have like an organic kind of hand. You can see the human hand on it, you know. You can see the textures and you can see the way they move. It's a little... That's where the charm is. There's the imperfections. It's like...
Absolutely, so. You guys definitely pull that off.
Cool. Good.
So, we were kind of talking about it outside. Having new media and, you know, like I watched it on Hulu.
Okay.
I'm sorry, not Hulu. Amazon.
Okay.
Amazon Prime. Does that change the way you guys write your shows, knowing that people might... Because, I mean, you know, like other shows like Portlandia or things like that, people watch all at one time.
Yeah.
Or at least most of the people that I know. And in animation as well, you know, a lot of people don't watch it on TV as much as they used to. Does that change the way that you guys write the stories or produce the show?
Not really in the writing process, but it, now getting into, like, the show's airing, and it's interesting now to, like, hear about the numbers that come back, and, like, it just feels like the landscape has changed so much. It's the Nielsen ratings just seemed a little... antiquated. I'm sure there's other ways they, you know, gauge DVR stuff, and
sure,
if there's
some crazy algorithm for
iTunes and all that stuff. So hopefully, I think it's great because it's just more outlets for people to see it. So
yeah, I mean, it, and I guess one of the reasons why people liked Marathon it is because it is, it, you know, it is an episodic show, but I don't know, that's kind of the fun of watching the next one and seeing what happens next. So,
yeah,
you know,
instead of waiting.
Yeah, exactly, and you get the context of the last one, but, you know, it's a new one, so
yeah,
it's exciting.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
And then you can binge, which is, you know, if you're an animation lover, like most people that listen to this, I mean, once you watch one, you're not just going to stop, you're going to keep on watching more.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, it would make me think that, like, running gags... You know, something that might be funny in one, and you're like, hey, let's do it in the next one, might not play as well when someone's going to watch it 15 or, you know, 20, 30 minutes later.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that something you guys thought about at all?
It's kind of like, you know, Killing Kenny. Like, that was the running gag, you know, for those guys for so long, and they got tired of doing it. So they just kind of bailed on it and just whatever. But, yeah, I mean, we're episodic, and there's a little bit of serialization to it, but... yeah, like, I mean, I just think people need to get to know the characters, and, like, you know, Jay, the younger brother who Kate Micucci does the voice for, he has a rich fantasy life, so it's always fun to kind
of
see Jay's fantasies.
He's one
you
of
know.
My favorite characters.
So, yeah, and just Fred Armisen as Terry is amazing, too, and all the, you know, crazy stuff that he does.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you got some amazing... I didn't want to poo-poo voice acting.
No, I just...
Yeah, you got some awesome people
on
the show. You definitely have some awesome people on the show. You know, and Fred Armisen, I mean, he basically is a cartoon character. You know, and
yeah, he's amazing. Perfect. I think he's like a Peter Sellers, you know?
Yeah.
He's just...
I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, he can really disappear into his characters, and it's great.
Yeah, and almost with a... you know, kind of the same thing we were talking about, where it's you're not trying too hard. He doesn't seem like he is, but he really, there's so much talent involved, and he just makes it seem so easy.
Yeah.
And then, of course, John DiMaggio, who is awesome.
Yeah.
He's everyone's favorite.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Megan Mullally, I adore them all. They're just great. Pamela Adlon and Justin Roiland, so yeah.
So in terms of, like, talking to the animators and, the people in charge of that, is there any kind of... you know, dialogue between, hey, this person is doing the voice, we weren't planning on it originally, but now they are, so we might have to change this or that.
Well, yeah, at first we had to do all temp voices, because, for one, we didn't have the cast figured out quite yet, and two, we had to get production going, so we would do just the PA and whoever we could grab and just do, like, a scratch track, like, temp voices.
Yeah.
And then later, when the voices came in, it was actually a little bit more work to go back and adjust everything. And that's what would happen when Isaac Hayes did Chef. it was hard to get. We always got him at the 11th hour kind of thing, so all the chef shots were had to be changed and to his voice because he'd read them a lot slower. So
and I'm guessing, you know, even though the movements are subtle and it's still going to be the same exact shapes,
yeah,
you're going to have to
still have to adjust it. Yeah, exactly. Yep, totally.
Anything for like the character design? Did you have to switch character design when you signed on certain people?
No. No.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it just worked.
Yeah.
I guess that's how casting works. So you cast different characters.
Yeah. Everything was pretty fine in that department.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's a segment that we like to ask certain animators on here. It's I'd animate that.
Uh-huh.
Basically, what is your favorite, or what would be your ideal thing to animate? If you had a choice between fictional, fantasy characters that have been done before, uh-huh. What's one character that you thought, oh man, I'd love to animate that?
Oh, probably Charlie Brown.
Yeah?
Missing the football. Yeah, and landing flat on his back. Yeah.
So, any particular reason? Just because
I can relate to that.
Yeah. Well, you kind of got to do that a little bit too, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you've already done it.
I've crossed that off the list.
So, in the future, is there anything else that you want to try to do? I mean, other than of course, you know, continue the show.
Yeah. Right now, this is my primary focus. I still have a lot more stories to tell with these characters, and I want to hang out with them some more, so hopefully that's all that's on my mind right now. So,
well, I have a million other questions that I like to ask you, but I'm sure you're extremely busy and tired, so I will let you go.
All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Out there's on IFC, and check it out. You have a website that has a bunch of really cool character designs and things like that.
Thank you. Yeah, that just went up, and I'll just once I get get out of the woods here, I'll be able to add some more stuff. But yeah, there's a nice sampling of some of the character designs over the years. So
very cool, man. Well, I'll definitely be watching the show. We'll keep on talking about it, and hopefully maybe we can have you back on sometime.
Yeah,
next time you're in Austin.
All right, for sure. Thanks, Josh.
I meant to ask you, how'd the panel go? You did a panel on the future of animation.
Yeah, it was great. It was really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
People responded pretty well. Good questions.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good group. It's fun to see people respond to the show. And yeah.
What was the overlying theme? What was the final thought? What, did you guys come to any epiphanies at all
for
the future of animation?
I think a lot of it was just talking about the technology and how it's made it more accessible for people. And it's just so true. It's just, I come from like a do-it-yourself garage style, lo-fi animator in, you know, background. And I just think the technology is so suited for people that want to make their own stuff and get it, you know, up on YouTube or their websites or whatever. But all that being said, you know, storytelling is still storytelling. You still have to tell a good story, and it doesn't matter how many types of software or whatever you have, you still have to have a good, you know, meat and potatoes story.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys my age, you know, we grew up watching South Park. You know, the first one premiered when I was like fourth grade or something like that.
Awesome.
So yeah, it was almost their age. But that and Aqua Teen Hunger Force, all of those, like,
oh yeah,
it made it accessible. It made you think, I can do this.
Yeah, because, totally.
You know, you can see how it was done, even though it was extremely difficult.
Yeah,
it kind of made you fall in love with it and want to do it. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joshua.